You're listening to the Old Time Dragnet Show, broadcasting from Boise, Idaho. Here's your host, Adam Graham.
Welcome. Now, I always say every week, vote for the show on Podcast Alley, vote for the show on Podcast Alley. Well, a listener emailed in to say, how do you vote on Podcast Alley? Could you give us a guide? We went ahead and we did that. We set it up over at dragnetradio.blogspot.com. So it shows you how to vote for the show on Podcast Alley. Also, we've gone ahead and we've created a page on Facebook. Now, what a page on Facebook does, it allows you to follow the show, comment on the show right on Facebook, not having to use a third-party website, like even going to the show notes site. You can leave a comment. If you like a show and you think your friends and family might enjoy it, then you can just hit the like button. So it's a neat feature. And so usually we just have show notes. We've got a couple extra things there. Go to dragnetradio.blogspot.com. And if you're listening to this in the future, the page is dropped off. We've got a show badge right under our Netflix ad on the site, which does remind me, speaking of Netflix, if you are a Netflix subscriber, Dragnet 1954 has been added to the Watch It Now. So if you're already subscribed and you're on one of the unlimited plans, you can actually listen to Dragnet, or watch the Dragnet 1954 movie right on your computer or with a Roku device. And if you are if you're not a subscriber, obviously just go to the show notes site as well. Click on the Netflix link and you can get signed up for a couple free weeks. And also be able to watch the 1954, Dragnet movie online for free. So. Encourage you to go ahead and do that. But since I mentioned Podcast Alley right at the start of the show, let's go ahead and we will get into those comments. And I do thank everybody so much for all the great comments, that we've gotten this past, month as well as last month. And I just encourage everyone to, vote once a month. That definitely just helps the show increase its reach. So, I encourage everybody to do that. Alright, so comments, coming off of, Podcast Alley. This one, comes from, Ken. Just subscribed to your show in iTunes. Great job from a fellow Idahoan. I'm a real Dragnet fan and I like your commentaries on each show. Brings me back to earlier days. Thank you so much, Ken. Adam, here's my vote for September. As always, you do a great job as host with your insight into all episodes. Keep up the great work. Oh, thanks a lot, Michael, who's writes in from California. I look forward to every week's podcast. I enjoy Adam's commentary. This takes me back to my childhood when watching Dragnet was a family event. As you play other web shows, please don't forget Pete Kelly's Blues, a listener from New York. Well, thanks a lot. And we are not going to forget Pete Kelly's Blues. In upcoming productions, we'll let you know about that. I better let you know about that now, actually. Before I do that, and I do get into emails, I want to let you know a little bit about our sponsors. Learning a new technology can be daunting, but not so with GoToMyPC. It's built for non-technical people, so everyone can enjoy the freedom of working from anywhere, anytime. Setup is completely automatic. Once you download the software, you're ready to go. Plus, free customer service is available 24/7 if you need it. Try GoToMyPC free for 30 days. Visit GoToMyPC.com/podcast. That's GoToMyPC.com/podcast for a free 30-day trial. All right, well, we also got other emails just even beyond the whole Podcast Alley thing, and I appreciate that email. I got an email from Manny who writes, just wanted to let you know that I'm a really big fan of your rebroadcasting and commentary on the Dragnet radio series. I'm one of the people that found you looking for old-time radio. I have to say that your show in Dragnet itself has got to be the best of the old-time stuff. The sound effects and atmosphere and all of it really do make it the movie of the mind. You're no slouch either. Your commentary really adds a level of greatness to an already great show. You also contributed to a conversation I had recently with an older woman at a convention I was doing. I should say I'm 29 and was holding my own discussing old-time radio, the centerpiece being Dragnet and your show. She was elated to hear that these shows are still available and still being followed. And it is great when you hear younger people into these shows because, you know, that's what will keep it alive long-term. It's passing them down from generation to generation, part of our American radio heritage. And I appreciate the comments on the show. And, you know, I think that this has really been a lot more successful than any other podcast I've done. So it's, you know, I think people appreciate the commentary because there's other Dragnet shows out there and other ways you can download it. So obviously that's part of what brings people to the show. But part of it is the show itself. The Superman show, even though it's a lot of fun, it's not been nearly as successful in terms of getting downloads. Maybe it's partially the sound effects. Because with the Superman, the only way that the sound effects could be more cheesy in some cases, particularly the early episodes, is if, for Superman flying, they go, whoosh, whoosh, whoosh.
Hi everyone, this is Andrew. I'm the one that edits the podcast. After hearing Adam's hilarious Superman flying sounds, I decided I would go ahead and throw in the clip of Superman flying. This is actually the intro to Superman if you've never heard Superman itself. So sit back, enjoy, and hope you guys like this quick sound clip.
Presenting the transcription feature, Superman!
Up the sky! Look!
It's a plane!
It's a plane!
It's Superman!
Okay, enough of that. I got another email from Natalie Welch. As I'm trying to catch up on your podcast, I've noticed that as a Jack Webb fanboy. A Jack Webb fanboy. I swear I've not actually dressed up as Jack Webb recently. I haven't even been to Los laid flowers on his grave, but then again, I haven't been to Los Angeles since I was a little kid, but I digress. Anyway, I've noticed that as a Jack Webb fanboy, you've included examples of his earlier work as Pat Novak and Jeff Regan. You've also provided a self-parodying appearance with Bob Hope. And this week, Dr. Kildare, which I've yet to hear, to see where it ties in with Webb and or Dragnet. Well, Natalie, the show, when you listen to it, it actually includes Jack Webb playing a police detective. That was a little, shall we say, more rose-colored glasses view of the world from Dr. Kildare. So that's the reason for that one. But she raises a great question towards the end. How about including Stan Freeberg's Dragnet parodies? He had three. St. George and the Dragonette, Little Blue Riding Hood, Christmas Dragnet, my personal favorite, I'm in Ohio, and there's a nice geographical joke regarding Ohio cities. Natalie, this is a great idea. Unfortunately, I'm running into an old opponent on this. My old opponent, the copyright law. The reason that we have old-time radio stories, when you get down to it, that was one thing I researched before I did the show, make sure this was legal. What makes it legal is the fact that under the old copyright law, you basically had the rights to your show, a copyrighted work for 28 years. And if you renewed that copyright, it'd be good for another 28 years. So you'd be looking at 56 years. Now, what happened with most old-time radio shows and why they've come into the public domain is the copyright just was not renewed because there was not commercial value seen in them from the people who owned them. So they lapsed into the public domain. With music, that's never been the case. And if Stan Freeberg had any, you know, type of attorney, he would, you know, His copyrights are, I'm certain, extended. So basically, Stan Freeberg's stuff is almost certainly still, it's under copyright, basically. So, As I understand the law, I think we would be able to go ahead and do Freeburg stuff in about sometime in the 2020s, maybe. Maybe, I hope. My frustration with the copyright laws not doing what they're supposed to do. Okay, off that topic. My new show, I promise, is going to talk about that. And actually, last time we were here with you, I told you that I had gotten up to the 14th episode. I'm now pleased to report that I'm up to the 13th episode. You know, wait a second. You said 14 last time. How is it that on the new show you're up to 13? Well, I'll get into the gritty details probably next week. But it'll suffice to say, unless you are the ultimate Jack Webb fanboy, you may not have enjoyed my original plan for the new series. After thinking about it, talking to my wife, we decided on a slightly different direction, which I think is going to make a lot of people pretty happy. But we'll get into that hopefully next week, once we get past episode 15. I want to get as many of these done as soon as possible because I start back up University of Phoenix, and I'm not going to have as much time for recording soon. All right, well, we're going to get into today's episode, which takes a look at something that's become even more common since the show was made, and it's called The Big Border.
The story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a robbery detail. Two convicts escaped from the state penitentiary. They're heading for your city. They're armed. They've boasted they won't be taken alive. Your job? Get them.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, October 6th. It was cloudy in Los Angeles. We were working a day watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Ed Jacobs, the boss is Captain Didion. My name's Friday. We were on the way out from the office, and it was 2:40 p.m. when we got to Chesterton Boulevard, number 1256.
Sounds like she's having a party, huh?
Yeah, try it again. Maybe they can't hear it inside.
Mm-hmm. Yes?
Police officers, ma'am. You Ruth Thompson?
Yes, that's right. What is it?
Well, my name's Friday. This is my partner, Sergeant Jacob, Central Robbery. We'd like to talk to you a few minutes if we could.
Well, I have a party going on right now. A few of my friends are over. What'd you want, Sergeant?
From Andy Powell, Miss Thompson. I understand you know him?
I did know him, yes. I haven't seen him for a long time. 3 or 4 years, anyway.
Mind if we ask a few questions about him? It won't take long.
All right. Come in, please.
Thank you. I'm sorry to disturb you, ma'am. It's pretty important that we wouldn't hold you up.
It's all right. Down the hall here.
All right.
We can talk in the kitchen if you don't mind. It's my girlfriend's birthday today, so it'd be nice to have a little party for her.
Oh, I see.
Chair there, if you like. Oh, here, let me wipe it off. You spilled a drink on it. It's probably Dan.
Suppose you know about Andy Powell, Miss Thompson, what happened this morning?
What's that?
About Andy Powell. You heard what happened this morning?
Just what I read in the morning paper. They said he broke out of San Quentin, another man with him. It's true, then. He did break out?
Yes, ma'am. That's the information we have. There's an all-points bulletin out on him.
Well, I don't want to get involved in it. It's none of my business. Andy doesn't mean anything to me.
Well, at the time he was set up, you were engaged to Powell. Is that right?
Yes, but that was before he got into trouble, before he went to San Quentin. I saw him after the trial. I told him how I felt about it. I told him it wasn't any use.
And you called it off, that is?
There wasn't much else to do. It was robbery, 5 years to life. It wasn't the first time, either. Andy knew it'd be a long time, so did I. Really, I had to tell him. I had to call it off.
We understand you were on Powell's correspondence list while he was up at Quentin. You wrote to him, did you?
Yes, the first couple of months. We haven't written lately, though. There wasn't any point to it, no point at all.
Well, when was the last time you heard from Powell, Miss Thompson? The last time you wrote to him?
Oh, 8 or 10 months. At least that. As I say, there wasn't extensive going on, and he knew he was in there for a long time. He couldn't expect me to wait all that time. Matter of fact, he said he didn't expect it. He told me that.
You've been up to visit Powell recently, Miss Thompson?
No, I haven't.
Well, you haven't seen him since he went up to Coyme. You'll swear to that?
Well, why do I have to swear to it? I already told you, Andy doesn't mean anything to me. It didn't make sense. It's all over. I'm not even a relative. Why do I have to swear to anything?
You haven't seen Powell since he went up to Clinton, that right?
Miss Thompson, is that right?
Well, what if I saw him, if I didn't see him? What difference does it make? It's none of my business.
Well, did you see him, Miss Thompson?
What difference does it make? I don't have anything to do with him. He doesn't mean anything to me. I took you.
Did you see him?
This morning.
When?
Late this morning, about 10:30.
Was he alone?
No, another man was with him.
Who was the other man? You recognize him?
Bert Selby. That's the way he introduced him. He didn't try to hide it. Some fellow he broke out of jail with.
Well, what'd they want? Why were they here?
Clothes, money. Looked like the devil, both of them. Terrible.
What'd you give them?
They asked for him. Not that silly. They didn't trust me anymore, and they trust you. And he had a knife. I tried to tell him I didn't have any money. He didn't believe me. He came at me with that knife. I gave him the money.
How much?
About $17, $18, some loose change. They emptied my purse. He took it off.
Anything else?
Clothes, a couple of suits of my father's. He died last year. They took his gun, too. Never thought Andy'd be that way. It was terrible.
What kind of a gun was it, Miss Thompson?
Colt revolver, 38, I think. They took that and the clothes and the money. It's about 10:30 this morning.
Now, how come you didn't report that? You say you knew about the escape. You knew they were wanted, didn't you?
Why should I? They warned me about it. They threatened me. Said they'd come back and get me if I told the police. Look, I don't want to get mixed up in this. I'm engaged to a nice fellow now. We want to get married. I don't want to get mixed up in this. Andy Powell's nothing to me.
You watched the two men when they left the house here? You noticed they drove off in a car?
No, I didn't. I just shut the door and prayed I was rid of them. Took my money, food, my dad's clothes. Don't make it any tougher, huh? Please.
Well, it's not a question of that, ma'am. We have to find him. We're going to need all the cooperation we can get.
I told you everything I could, honestly. Said they'd come back and kill me if I even talked to you. I can't do any more. I sure hope you don't find him.
How's that?
And Andy went out the door. It's the last thing he said. He said if the cops ever found him, there was going to be a fight. Terrible look on his face.
Yeah.
He said he'd never take him alive.
The APB had come in a few minutes before 8 o'clock that morning. It was from the warden's office, San Quentin. The two suspects had been assigned to an early morning work detail at the penitentiary, and they were first reported missing at the 7 a.m. count. Number one suspect was Andrew A. Powell, WMA, 29 years, 5'9", 175 pounds. Brown hair, blue eyes, tan complexion. Suspect number two, Bertram O. Selby, WMA, 31 years, 5'11", 160 pounds, blonde hair, gray eyes, tan complexion. Both of them had long criminal records. Both of them had been serving time for armed robbery. They'd used guns before. We figured if they had to, they'd use them again. Before we left Powell's ex-girlfriend, Ruth Thompson, we called the office and arranged for a 24-hour stakeout on her home in case the escaped prisoners returned. We also made arrangements for a stakeout at the downtown restaurant where she was employed as cashier. We passed along the information which the Thompson girl had given us, and a broadcast and an APB was gotten out on the suspects. 4.05 p.m., Ed and I continued making the rounds of all the known friends and associates of the escaped prisoners. We failed to come up with any more leads. 5.50 p.m., we went back to the city hall.
Clouding up again, huh? Over there in the east?
Yeah, paper says rain tonight and tomorrow. We can sure use it.
Well, I can't.
What's the matter?
I haven't had a chance to get the shoemakers yet. Here. Yeah. Hole in my shoe. Been meaning to get them half sole. I keep forgetting.
Yeah. You don't tell me that's the only pair of shoes you got.
Well, I've got another pair at home. They're not comfortable, though. Not broken in. It's trouble with this job.
What do you mean?
Shoes. You get a new pair, start wearing them around. It happens every time.
Huh?
No sooner you get the tops broken in, the soles wear out. It's a vicious circle.
Yeah.
Hi, this is work.
Oh, hi, Jess. Anything to look for us, you know?
I don't know. I don't think so. I'll check it. How'd you two make out? Any luck?
Oh, not too bad, Jess. We know Powell and Selby were in town this morning. Good chance they're still here.
Mm-hmm.
Any kickback on that last all points we got out?
Nothing so far. Our Gaffney and Ricketts are running down a couple of possibles right now. One of them might pan out. Nothing on the book, Joe. We're clear.
Just saying, Ed, on this Powell and Selby thing, got a couple of possibles we're checking on. Both calls came in the last hour. One was a holdup, Olympic near Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
Pawn shop there. Two men pulled it off, slugged the owner, took clothes, money, 12-gauge shotgun.
What about descriptions on the men?
Well, they seemed to be fairly close. When I got over the phone, Gaffney and Ricketts are out talking to the victim. They took mugs of Powell and Selby along, waiting for their call back now.
You said you had two calls. What was the other one?
211 and slugging out on Hollywood Boulevard, just above Western. A couple of thieves knocked over a dry goods store. Some take. clothes and money. Descriptions are pretty close there, too. Hollywood division's covering. Waiting for their call back. Does anyone want to smoke?
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks. Thompson girl is the only one who had anything, huh? None of the others could help you out?
Yeah, that's about the size of it. Apparently Powell doesn't have too many connections in town. Selby has even less. No more than a dozen names on that list, were there, Joe? Friends, relatives?
An even dozen. A couple of bars Powell was known to hang out when he was in town. Checked them out, too. Nothing.
Yeah. Well, they sure made a beeline here after they broke Quentin. It's a good 500-mile stretch. If they don't have the connections here to help them, then what's the big attraction?
Yeah.
Well, you could have some help lined up we don't know about. Somebody to hide them out, keep them in groceries for a while.
It's possible they're making a run for one of the border towns, Tijuana, Mexicali. Maybe Powell figured on more help from the Thompson girl. Clothes and money. Enough to get him and Selby over to Mexico, huh?
She said all I got was $17. Had to cut corners to make it on that.
Mm.
Robert Gonzalez. Oh, yeah, Jack.
Mm-hmm. Are you sure? Yeah, okay, fine, thanks. Bye.
You got it.
Jack Ricketts. He and Gaffney just finished talking to the owner of the pawn shop that was held up, the one on Olympic.
Yeah.
They gave him a handful of mug shots to check. He tabbed two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Powell and Selby.
6:30 p.m. A supplementary broadcast and an APB was gotten out on the two suspects, and the Record Bureau's photocopy room turned out 2,000 copies of Powell's and Selby's mugshot for distribution. At 9 p.m., a theater on Western Avenue was robbed of $192. Powell and Selby were again identified as the holdup men. The robbery victim, the manager of the theater, said that both men were armed, one with a .38 revolver, the other with a sawed-off shotgun. Neither the manager nor the two witnesses were able to tell us how the thieves got away from the scene of the crime, if they were on foot or if they had a car. 11:20 p.m. A hotshot call came through on a holdup at a liquor store and delicatessen down on South Central Avenue. For the third time that night, Powell and Selby were identified from their mugshots as the holdup men. They'd used the same weapons, the revolver that they'd taken from the Thompson girls' home, and the shotgun that they picked up in the robbery of the Olympic Boulevard pawn shop. Again, the victims were unable to tell us how the suspects got away, whether on foot or by car. Midnight, 1 a.m., there were still no replies to supplementary broadcasts and bulletins which had been gotten out. 1:25 a.m., another hotshot call came through, this time on a holdup and a slugging at the 2050 room, a small nightclub on West 9th Street. Ed and I handled the call. For the fourth time, the bandits were identified as Powell and Selby, and for the fourth time, they'd made good their escape. We interviewed the manager of the 2050 room, Herman Saunders.
Quite a few people in here at the time of the holdup, Mr. Saunders?
Yeah, good for Thursday night, 30 or 40 anyway. They sure left in a hurry. This is the second time this year we've been knocked over. Insurance company isn't going to like it too much.
Well, how much money did they take altogether, do you know?
A little less than $600 from the cash register, mostly currency, some rolls of dimes and quarters. Got another $100.50 from my wallet. That's about it. They didn't take any from the customers.
Are you sure about that identification, are you? There's no chance of a mistake there?
I'm positive. I'd know Andy Paul anywhere. I should know him. Like I told you, he worked for me a year and a half.
I was here at 2050?
Yeah, he worked behind the bar. Good man, too. I don't get it at all.
You mean why I went bad?
Well, yeah, that too. What I mean is if you're going to hold up a place, you don't pick a joint where everybody knows you. I spotted Andy as soon as I saw him at the bar. So did a couple of the waiters.
He wasn't wearing any kind of a mask. He didn't make any attempt to disguise himself?
No, stood there big as life, him and this other fella. Didn't waste any time either. They pulled the guns, lined up everybody in the place, and stood them against that wall over there.
Mm-hmm.
Real Wild West style. Took over the whole place. Acting real wild, Andy and this other fella. Must be crazy.
Nobody was hurt? Didn't slug anyone?
I slapped a few of the customers around. I thought for a while they were really going to get rough. They had us lined up against the wall. Andy was acting tough. Had this knife with him, good 4-inch blade. Went right down the line, jabbing people with it, threatening him. Must be out of his mind.
Now you say he didn't take any money from the customers.
Yeah, that's right. They worked it pretty fast. Emptied the cash register in my wallet, then they beat it. Never so glad to see anybody go in my life.
Well, how'd they get away? Do you have any idea on that?
Old guy who sells papers down the corner, he says he thinks he saw a car pull away right after the stick-up. Said it was a blue sedan. Don't know how much stock you can put in it. The old man's eyes aren't what they used to be.
Do you know Paul pretty well when he was working here, Mr. Saunders? I mean, do you know any of his friends, people he used to run with?
No, I didn't know him that well. He worked for me, that's all. I still have his old address, the place he was living when he worked for me. I can get it if you want.
Yeah, if you would, please.
Sure, no trouble. I just don't get it. Don't get it at all. Of all the joints in town he could have held up, he had to pick mine, the one place he'd be recognized. You think he'd have better sense, wouldn't you?
You think so, yeah.
How did I ever hire a guy as dumb as that Paul holding up the place he worked for? Biggest mistake he ever made.
No, he made a bigger one yesterday.
Yeah, what was that?
When he broke prison. 2:05 a.m. Further investigation at the scene of the latest holdup failed to turn up any new leads. While Ed Knights checked on Powell's former address, which we'd gotten from the owner of the 2050 room, Gonzalez, Ricketts, and Gaffney continued checking the immediate neighborhood. In addition, a special detail from Metro Division was sent in to cover the entire area. The suspect's former address turned out to be a rooming house up on West Temple Street. The landlady remembered Andy Powell, but she had no forwarding address on him, and she could tell us nothing about his former friends and associates. We checked back with Gonzalez, Ricketts, and Gaffney, and they told us that besides the old newspaper vendor, the counterman at the coffee shop near the 2050 room had also spotted a blue sedan leaving the vicinity of the nightclub shortly after the holdup. He was able to give him the make, the model, and a partial license number. A supplementary all points had been gotten out on it immediately, and the information relayed to DMV and auto theft detail. 3:10 a.m., Ed and I completed our assignment in the investigation and went back to the office to check for instructions from Captain Didion.
Can't see how we'd be much use out on the street the way things stand now, can you?
No, I don't.
Everything's covered, I can think of. Supplementary all points is out. Detail from Metro's working in the neighborhood.
It's funny, isn't it?
What's that?
Unless Andy Powell going back to that place he used to work and holding it up, that doesn't make any sense at all, does it?
That's for sure. Must have known somebody was going to recognize him. Couldn't have been a coincidence.
There was only one way I can figure it. They don't care, either one of them. They got their money now, a car. They both got guns. They're out to go as far as they can.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hi, Jess.
Hi.
You just get back in?
Yeah.
Hi, Joe.
Right. You as tired as you sound?
Worse. Fair piece of news, though.
Yeah, what's that?
Powell and Selby, they just found their hideout.
After 3 hours of canvassing the general downtown area, particularly in the vicinity of the last holdup, the team of men working with the special detail from Metropolitan Division interviewed a desk clerk in a small hotel on South Broadway who recognized the suspect's mugshots. The two of them had registered early the morning before under the names J.E. Dennis and Harold Thompson, both from Fresno, California. The hotel room was searched and two San Quentin inmate uniforms were found stuffed under the mattress of the bed. After the room was processed for fingerprints, there was no doubt that the recent occupants were Powell and Selby. The clerk had no idea when they were supposed to return. The hotel was staked out immediately, and the citywide search for the escaped prisoners went on. The following day, Thursday, October 7th, 11:30 a.m., still no sign of the suspects, no further reports or leads as to their whereabouts. The search went on. Ed and I signed back in at the office. 10 minutes later, a long-distance phone call came in for us.
When was that, Mort? Mm-hmm. What's that? Yeah, close enough, right? We'll let you know, yeah. Bye. Mark Leard, I'm San Diego.
Yeah, what do you want?
One of the traffic officers was checking a car about 8 o'clock this morning, 586 parking.
Mm-hmm.
Blue sedan fits close to the description of the escape car.
Well, it's a pretty common model, isn't it? Do you see anything else?
Traffic man checked the inside of the car, glove compartment, found half a dozen rolls of dimes and quarters, same name stamped on all of them.
Yeah.
2050 room.
You are listening to Dragnet, authentic stories of your police force in action.
October 7th, Thursday, 1 p.m. After we got the report from Lieutenant Mort Gear that the escape car, along with a few dollars of stolen money, had been located in San Diego that morning, Ed and I had a meeting with Captain Didion. It was beginning to look like our first hunch was right. Powell and Selby's 24-hour campaign of holdups in the Los Angeles area had netted them a fresh change of clothes and more than enough money to live on for a while. With the locating of the escape car in San Diego, it looked like the suspects were apparently taking the next logical step, a fast move over the international border into Mexico, a distance of less than 20 miles from San Diego. Probably they figured once over the line, they had a good chance of losing themselves. 1:40 p.m., on Captain Didion's orders, Jess Gonzalez, Ed, and I got in a car and headed south for San Diego with a supply of mugshots of the escaped prisoners. We got there a few minutes after 4 p.m. We went directly to the San Diego PD, where we contacted Sergeant Tony McGuire, robbery detail.
Tough week, huh? Hear they've been driving you crazy up there.
Just about, Tony. 4 robbers in 24 hours giving us a run. How about Mark Gear? You around?
Yeah, he just went down the hall, Jess. I'll be back in a minute. Why don't you fellas sit down?
Thanks very much.
What's the latest, Tony? Anything since you picked up that blue sedan?
No, not much. Got the car in the impound, had it dusted for prints. We made them all right, both sets, Powell and Selby.
No sign of them around town?
No, got it pretty well covered, too. Another trace.
We're in a good spot to make it over into Mexico.
Hate to disappoint you.
What do you mean?
We think they already made it.
About 6 o'clock that night, Gonzalez, Ed, and I, together with Lieutenant Gear, Tony McGuire, and Sergeants Gayton and Schultz, drove south from San Diego to the international line. We left mugshots of Powell and Selby with the immigration officers at the entry gate. Then we drove into the town of Tijuana, contacted the local commandant of police, and he promised us full cooperation. He assigned a special detail of his men to work with us in covering the town. At 8 p.m., the block-by-block canvas of the city began. Every back alley, every bar, every restaurant, every hotel, they were all checked. The tourist attractions, the souvenir stands, the nightclubs, the highlight pavilion. We went straight through on it, 8 o'clock that night until 5 o'clock the next morning. All it got us was sore feet and a mediocre lead from a native taxi driver. After being shown the mugshots, he told one of the Mexican officers in the detail that about noon that day, he picked up two Americans resembling Powell and Selby and driven them to the town of Tecate, another Mexican tourist spot about 25 miles to the east. 10:30 a.m., we drove over and checked with the police at Tecate, and they told us that two Americans had arrived in the town that morning. He invited Jess Gonzalez to go along with the three of his men to the hotel where the men were supposed to be staying. Ed and I waited in the office.
Hi, Jess. What do you got?
Not much. Went over to the hotel. The two men weren't there. Desk clerk says they told him they were driving out to a little village about a mile from here.
Mm-hmm.
Police commandant asked me to come back here and wait. Said he and his men would drive out to the village and check the men out.
That seems a little funny, doesn't it?
Well, he didn't invite me to come along. It's not a good idea to push him. I mean, after all, it's his jurisdiction.
Yeah.
We're supposed to wait here till they get back?
Yeah. I'm back to him now. See, Paulus here?
Yeah.
See. About half an hour, yes, sir. All right, gracias. Goodbye, Steve. The commandant, he and his men found the two Americans.
Yeah.
No go, they're not Powell and Selby.
Half an hour later, the police commandant of Tecate returned to the station along with his men and the two American tourists in question. One look at them and we knew we'd made the trip from Tijuana for nothing. Except for their build and the color of their hair, the two Americans bore little or no resemblance to Powell and Selby. 2:30 p.m., we headed back for Tijuana and we checked in with Mort Gear and the rest of the men. While we'd been gone, they'd chased down half a dozen leads, but none of them had panned out. The rest of the afternoon, we covered the racetrack at Agua Caliente and distributed mugshots of the suspects to all track police officers. The mutual windows were covered and also the foreign book. No luck. The six of us took time out for a bite of supper and we talked it over. Logically, the next place in line to cover was either the fishing town of Ensenada on the coast or the city of Mexicali, further inland. We decided to try Ensenada first. 7:30 that night, we checked in at the Ensenada police station where we met with a local sub-commandant, Pedro Martinez. Like the other commandants in Tijuana and Tecate, he offered full cooperation and gave us a special detail of men to aid in the search. We gave him a supply of mugshots of the two convicts to distribute among his men.
Here you are, sir. These are pictures of one of them, Andrew Powell. And this one here is the other man, Bert Selby.
All right, thank you.
Juan?
Si. Yes. These pictures, Juan. Criminals. They're for distribution to the men, one each.
Si. ¿Estos son los hombres?
Si, ¿por qué?
Un momento.
Si. Excuse me, officers.
Yeah, it's all right.
Go ahead.
¿Qué pasa?
Sure, what is it? What's got me? I don't know.
See the look on his face when the chief showed him the mugshots?
Oh, he's got something on his mind. Let's wait a minute.
Officers, I hope you'll excuse me.
Yes, sir. Anything wrong?
Well, my assistant, Teniente San Felipe, he says he knows the pictures of these men.
Oh, how's that?
He says he saw these men this morning here in Ensenada.
Yeah, he's sure about that, is he?
Yes, sir. He says he's sure. He says the two men were here last night, right here in the station.
You mean your men booked them in? They committed some kind of crime?
Oh, no, sir. They came in to report a crime.
8:20 p.m. On further questioning, the assistant to the Ensenada Commandant of Police told us that the night before, two men answering Powell and Selby's description had come in to file a complaint at the Central Police Station. They charged that they'd had their pockets picked at a local bar while they were under the influence of alcohol. The two complainants, who matched Powell's and Selby's descriptions perfectly, signed themselves J.E. Dennis and Harold Thompson, both from Fresno, California, the same names and addresses that had been used by the occupants of the Southside Los Angeles hotel room where the discarded prison uniforms had been found a day and a half before. After a brief talk with a police commandant, he dispatched a special detail to go out and pick up the two men registered as Dennis and Thompson at a motel near the south end of the city. At the commandant's request, we remained at the office. 9 p.m., 9:30, The detail assigned to the job returned, but with only one of the suspects with him, Andrew Powell. While resisting arrest, the other suspect, identified as Selby, received a cut forehead, being taken to a local clinic for treatment. The commandant briefed us on what had happened.
The rooms were searched, Officer Friday. Some money was found, also two guns, a revolver and a shotgun. Here they are.
All right, thanks very much, sir. Paul, how about it? You ready to cop out?
What are you talking about, cop out? What'd you guys come all the way down here for anyway? You can't touch us.
What makes you think we can't?
You can't, that's all. You know better. You can't arrest us down here. No jurisdiction.
We didn't arrest you, Paul. The Mexican officers did.
Okay, fine. Now, how do you expect to get us out of Mexico? Yes, again, copper. You know you can't do it. You haven't got the right to.
Maybe. You want to tell us where you have the loot, the money you took in those holdups?
Why should I? Look, why don't you admit it? We got your beat. We got over the line. You can't touch us down here.
I don't bet on that, mister. Commandant?
Yes, sir?
You want to tell him how it stands?
I will see the defendant. I'm in charge of the Northern District. Is notified in the morning of your case. He will see that you and your partner are deported.
What are you trying to pull? You can't do that. You know it. It's illegal.
So is robbery, Paul. Come off it.
Doesn't make any difference. You can't touch us in Mexico. It's against the law. You can't touch us.
A popular misconception, Mr. Powell. I'm afraid you have made a mistake. If you like, you can pass the word.
How long would it be for us to receive the prisoners at the line, sir?
I don't know. A long time, I think. Maybe as long as 1 o'clock tomorrow.
You know, you can't do this. You'll never get away with it. I know a lawyer in Tijuana. I'll get him to straighten that out.
You understand, Sergeant? We can't hand this man over to you now. But if you will be at the international border at 1 o'clock tomorrow, I'm sure they'll be crossing over.
You can't do this. It's illegal. You know you can't.
We're going to try.
Wasting your time? Why don't you admit it? You can't arrest us. We got over the line. We got your beat. You can't arrest us, and you know it. You know that, don't you?
There's only one thing I know for sure, Powell.
Yeah?
San Quentin. You got out, and you're going back.
The story you have just heard was true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On December 9th, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 87, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial. Andrew Powell and Bertram Selby were deported from Mexico as undesirable aliens and turned over to U.S. authorities at the international border. They were immediately arrested by police officers on the American side and returned to Los Angeles for trial. They pled guilty to 4 counts of first-degree robbery and received sentences as prescribed by law. First-degree robbery is punishable by a prison term of from 5 years to life. After being returned to San Quentin, Powell and Selby were filed on, tried, and convicted of escape. Both of them are now serving life terms in Folsom State Penitentiary, Represa, California.
For their cooperation in preparing tonight's broadcast, Dragnet wishes to thank Chief of Police Adam E. Jansen and the San Diego Police Department. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors, Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Brasher. Heard tonight were Barney Phillips, Whit Connor, Herb Ellis. Script by Jim Moser. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking. Fatima Cigarettes, best of all king-size cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles. Now, it's Counter Spy on NBC.
Welcome back. This episode's interesting. Like I said before we got into the show, this is an issue that continues to be relevant to this day. Because there's a lot of... it's a very convenient escape for a lot of criminals in California to head for the Mexican border. Now they can be caught and they can be brought back. But Mexico is a big country. In some ways, it's just it's like looking for a needle in a haystack. In this case, they found a cooperative Mexican police officer that was willing to get them, help them get their man, which helped make this happen. They really probably should have gone further, Mexico wasn't far enough. If they'd gone to Buenos Aires, they probably would have been okay. If they, you know, really, set a goal of getting just totally away from the police. But Mexico, yeah, Joe Friday's gonna get you. Sorry. That's pretty much the way it is. Joe Friday's gonna get you. All right. Well, we're nearing the end of the Ed Jacobs era. I want to thank everybody so much for listening to tonight's program. If you have any comments on the show, please feel free to email me, adam@adamsweb.us. Again, cast your vote at Podcast Alley. We got instructions over at the show notes site, dragnetradio.blogspot.com. And please become a fan of our fan page. It's really going to be great to have the show on Facebook, so I encourage you to do that. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.